programs you would not be able to come. I strongly felt that we should proceed even if
current status.
I'm sorry. Yeah, about the end.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, with regard to the asset life commission that we aim to create 1 million work opportunities over the first 5 years of implementation. And the first slide shows you just that the targets that we have set for the different sectors over the first 5 years, and the infrastructure, 700,000, environment, culture sector, 200,000, work opportunities, social sector, 150,000, economic sector, 12,000. And then another key indicator will also be training days provided. Now, the next slide, what we have here, that is progress against the 5-year target. We want to show you the work opportunities created up to the end of the data that we're showing you is up to the end of December 2006. That's the end of the third quarter for the financial year 06-07. And it will show you that we have the infrastructure created 281,600 work opportunities, environment and culture 196,000, social sector 33,000, and economic sector 7,700. Up to now, up to that point, rather, the EPRP is on course. Basically, yes, we have achieved 47% of the work opportunities created in terms of the number of net work opportunities overall. The provincial situation, what we the slide shows you is that the performance of the infrastructure sector against the 5-year target. And in the, I just want to point out perhaps a few provinces. Explain briefly what we have in this slide. We have targets that were set where the provinces have to deliver work opportunities in the infrastructure sector directly, that's by the provinces, and then we have what the municipality is supposed to deliver. And in terms, so the over the first 5 years, the Eastern Cape, for example, has to create 61,650 work opportunities. That is the province in total over the first 5 years, taking into account the program kick off the financial year 2004-05, which means we have just completed in April 3 years of the first 5 years. So we are into the fourth year now. But the data, because of the time lag in terms of collecting the data is basically a lag time of 3 to 4 months. So the data here reflects the situation as at the end of December 2006. We are currently busy consolidating the last quarter data for the previous financial year. Like we have the data right now, but it has not been cleaned. We are busy cleaning the data and checking the quality of that data. That's it. So what we are showing you here is the situation as at the end of the third quarter of the financial year 06-07. Thank you. So, and the targets in the first column for the various provinces, those were the targets set for the provinces. That's what the province has to deliver, what we call directly, which means provincial government departments in the infrastructure sector. In the second major column there, we say indirect delivery. That's what the municipalities have to deliver, and we have broken down those details, obviously, according to the provinces. That's why if we use the first example, we can say in the Eastern Cape, municipalities, the infrastructure sector, they have to contribute 84,245 work opportunities over the first 5 years. The performance up to now, then, you will see it is the Eastern Cape, for instance, it has... the total target there was 145,800, almost 145,900. let me proceed. And, I thought my time is up. what we have here would be 30,865 workers in the chair. It's important for us to contextualize that figure. We get in data on many more projects. What we do then is we have to check the quality of the data. So what we see, what we reflect here, that would be the projects that have passed the data quality requirements, which means in actual fact much more is happening, but it's often a question of the poor data quality. That's why we like to give you an example. We can't include a project, for instance, where it says X number of work opportunities have been created, but there's no budget and no expenditure, so it's difficult for us to verify that. We refer back to the province for improvement of the data quality. That's why you will see what we have in the last column there. We show the targets that the province, how they have performed, and often it's also a reflection of the poor data quality. Eastern Cape only achieved 10% of the target, but I'm sure that done much more than that, but that's what we could get, the data that we could verify. In the second quarter, just as comparison, for instance, the end of September 2006, they only achieved 4% and they've moved to 10% now. And you will see in some of the other, Gauteng, for instance, it has achieved its target, where it should have been up to the end of basically over the 5 years, but they can certainly overperform, and you can see overall on a national basis in terms of provinces they are 44% of the way. If we look at the next slide, that is the situation in the provinces in terms of the social sector and the economic sector. Now what we are showing you basically data for three sectors. The fourth sector is the environment and culture sector, but that is mostly delivered by the provinces, rather by the national departments. And there's very little data that we get on environment and culture sector projects for the provinces. So, in the social sector, for instance, the provinces, they've achieved, according to the data that we can verify, 22% of the targets that they're supposed to have been. And then we have a situation in the economic sector, where there are only two provinces really providing us with data on the economic sector, namely Limpopo and then Western Cape. In terms of the, as we combine those three sectors, then now you will see that overall for the for provincial government departments, infrastructure, social and economic sector, we have created 40% of the target already, taking into account that we are busy consolidating the data for the fourth quarter, which means 40% now, and we are confident that they will definitely should have been halfway towards that target once we have consolidated the data for the fourth quarter. Then, what we have shown you up to now, that is the situation that's progress against the 5-year targets. This particular slide shows we have broken down the targets into annual targets, which means then the first year we would have been on target, we would have created 10,000 work opportunities. The second year, 190,000 for a total of 300,000, and which means at the end of the third year, 2006-2007, we should have created 550,000 work opportunities by the end of 2007, if we want to achieve the 1 million work opportunities over the first 5 years. Now, against those targets, at the end of December, the infrastructure was closer to 328,800 work opportunities, and they have achieved 86% of the target at the end of December 2000 and at the end of the third quarter, which means that the fourth quarter data must still be added to that. to in order for them to have achieved the target where they should have been at the end of December. And overall then, in the environmental council sector, for instance, they should have created 7,000 work of teams. They have overperformed vastly. We find the situation in the environmental council sector that there are many established programs. Programs that existed initially, they were part of the special policy, the program, and they established programs such as Working for Water, Working Fire, Working on Wetland. So they were up and running by the time that they were going into the EPWP fold. So they obviously performing much better than programs that kicked off afresh. Social sector countries, 51%, they've achieved 51% of the targets. Economic sector also overperforming in terms of where they should have been at the end of December 2006. Overall, you will see we have created, we have reported to work opportunities 519,179 work opportunities of the four, against a target of 487,000 where they should have been at the end of the third quarter. So, in terms of the number of work opportunities created, the program is on track, but you will see there are vast discrepancies between the various programs and between the various sectors. If we look at the overall figure that we in the provinces, that's then you will see that at the end of against the 5-year target of 365,000. Now, we are currently, we have given you the breakdown for year 1, year 2, and year 3. And we have for the various provinces. So at the end of year 1, 156,944 workers were created in the provinces. Year 2, 60,000. Year 3, 48,700, for a total of 265,970, which is 79% of the targets against the 5-year figure. Just have a brief look at the municipalities. We had initially had very poor reporting from municipalities, and we still have, because we are supposed to source the municipal I'm sure Michael will speak to that perhaps in more detail, the infrastructure, but the municipalities deliver mostly on the infrastructure sector of the EPWP. And the municipalities, they have to use their league allocations to create work opportunities. And what we do...
Then we are now lost again. We went with him to a particular place, and when he went on, then we don't have what is went up to page 12 with him. But then thereafter, we don't have what he's having.
Did you just put him back down? Let me just explain. I think the slides, just got a little bit better. The slides that were provided to members was the slides that we have prepared for the MINMEC reporting. And since then, we have updated to give you a breakdown of the municipal figures too. So we apologize if there's a discrepancy that we thought this would actually add value to the understanding of the presentation.
So, in the meantime, can we use what you're presenting?
Yes. And we can certainly give members update the full presentation, the full the additional slides we have added then.
Is that in order?
Thank you, Chair. So, municipalities are supposed to use part of their MID allocation, that's the municipal infrastructure grant allocation, to create work opportunities. And we're supposed to source this data from the from DPLG through the MID MIS. And we, you will see in year one, we couldn't source any data from the MID MIS free, because the MID MIS at the time could not produce it. And in year two, we had limited reporting also, but obviously vast improvement. So subsequently, many municipalities started reporting to us directly on their contribution to the EPWP. So we decided to include these figures to show that things are actually moving at the local government level also with regards to the EPWP. So in year two, we had from municipalities reported 43,688 work opportunities, and year three, up to the end of December, we had 23,300 work opportunities for a total of 67,000 work opportunities. Now we see, which means, and reporting varies across the different provinces. Like the Free State, you will see there's a very good reporting on municipal level reporting, and the very poor municipal level reporting. Then we And then if we look at the provincial government departments in the provinces, we have broken that down into also 1 year performances, and we have shown where they should have been against the 5 year targets. And overall, provinces they've achieved 22% of that target up to the end of December. But there's also, once again, vast discrepancy across the various provinces. And the discrepancies, I have to emphasize, it is really a function often of poor quality data that we do get in, and we have often have to refer data back for verification and validation to provinces before it can be included into the, our quarterly reports. So the achievement, the economic sector, what we have here, that's the social sector, and in the economic sector, I said earlier, basically only two provinces reporting. If we summarize our data up to now, we can say we are on target in terms of the numbers that we do get for the work opportunities. But there are, if you look at the overall figures, it camouflages basically a lot of the poor reporting in the various sectors. And we have given you today the picture with regard to performance against the 5 year targets, as well as where they should have been at the end of the third quarter. For 2000 for year three. So you will see in terms of the 5 year targets, the environmental sectors, we said it's ahead of the program, although they've achieved overall. The economic sector, 65% of the total target form against the 5 years. And then for the infrastructure sector, slightly behind the program, and the social sector. Certainly could achieve much better in terms of reporting. The 3 years into the program, actually 2.5 years into the program, we have also launched or commissioned a midterm review study. And the objective of the study is basically to assess the relevance and the efficiency and the effectiveness of the overall performance of the program, and then we want to look at the overall quality and sustainability and the applicability of the EPWP to see whether there are currently existing programs that could be replicated, and then the literature review should also make recommendations as how the ECR would be, should be structured and scaled up into the future. And I'm sure Michael will address some of the initiatives, or at least on some of the questions regarding the scaling up initiatives. Work done up to now, the status report, basically the first one, we have submitted the report to MINMET, to the interim review proposal, and currently an international research team led by the HRC, they are busy conducting the research, and they are looking at interviews with between 300 to 400 officials at national, provincial, and local government level. They will interview. They will also look at how the EPWP performs against international benchmarks. And then, in terms of the review of the EPWP, they will look at key documentation. And as I said, they will have interviews both with government officials and politicians. And the main aim of the midterm review, as I said, is to see whether 3 years into the program, there are key things that we should perhaps be, could perhaps do better in order to ensure that the program is a well achieved overall achievement. Chair, allow me also to just point out a few key challenges that the program currently do experience. And the first one is that we would like to point out that the institutional arrangements across the three spheres of government it still proved to be a challenge, and that could impede on to efficient delivery across the four sectors. In terms of the municipal contribution, we would like to point out that municipalities are severely lacking behind the projected targets, and we don't know whether it's a question of a delivery or whether it's just a question of poor reporting up to now. With regard to training, as you would know, one of the key indicators for the expanded public works program, I've highlighted currently the work opportunities. But another key indicator would be the amount of training that we can provide to poor unemployed people. And there are also some serious challenges with regard to training, and the first one is to provide relevant and quality training to all the participants. Initially start off with life skills training, but we are currently working strongly to get hard skills across to developing participants. With regard to training, there's also the issue of funding and logistics to ensure that all participants will get training, and they are working closely with the Department of Labour, the National Office and Regional Office, as well as the CETAs. And then we find that many work officers cannot be counted because of the lack of fame. In terms of duration of employment, the average duration in the infrastructure sector is between 4 to 6 months, whereas in the social sector and the environment culture sector can be anything up to 2 years. There's obviously a vast variation in terms of the duration of the work opportunities, and this often leads to criticism that the program is seen as unsustainable, and this is something obviously that we are looking at. Then another challenge is the perception that EPWP is the solution to the unemployment problem, and it's important for us to point out that it is but one of a range of government interventions to address unemployment. And it's not designed to address the demand for work, but supply-led, and studies have been commissioned in regard to move towards more a demand-driven approach for the EPWP. And then another challenge for us is that the different design is required for EPWP to meet the demand for work from unskilled labor, and we have to look seriously at and the different studies that we have commissioned as well as the midterm review, hopefully will reflect on some of the design issues and what we can do differently if we like to achieve getting the seat. Thanks, Chair. That's the first part. I said there are two others.
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, we have I'm right now will present on all the National Youth Service and the Bukopedia program, which was a specific request from the committee. And then Swazi Maja will just present a case on the Bukopedia program in Mpumalanga. She's the program manager from Mpumalanga. And I think it will give a little bit more insight into the kind of closer to the ground how this program unfolds. So I'll give more kind of a national picture of Bukopedia. But then Swazi will drill down into the Mpumalanga program. So that members get a sense of how this unfolds at the local level. Let me start with the National Youth Service program. I think this was it's a relatively new program within the EPWP. The National Youth Service has been around, but with the minister requested that we implement the National Youth Service as part of EPWP within the built environment. And we then, and this program is designed to meet that response as well as the State of the Nation address February where this was announced. I think maybe to just give a sense of the National Youth Service model as it is structured really through between the Youth Commission, just the members have the there was a So the National Youth Service model really as structured, there's a National Youth Service unit that is part of the currently part of the Ubuntu Youth Fund that manages it. And this is essentially how the program is structured. It typically consists of three parts. There's the community service part, there's a structural and learning individual development component, and there's the extra opportunities component. And the community service component, so in our case, community service component will be that the youth will work on public buildings, be it in the construction and maintenance. Structured learning and individual development will focus on providing skills in that sector, so the youth will be trained on the technical skills, painting, bricklaying, carpentry, etc. And then the extra opportunities will be to guide youth after the year, the program is typically a year, as to how they can pursue further careers in these trades, how they can become full-fledged artisans, and this program will help them get them on the way into that. So, apart from that, there's this specific youth development learning that is part of the program, which is provided through Zubumbu, which is focused on life skills and entrepreneurship training, cooperative education, etc., so that youth can, over the year, map out on the way they would like to develop the career at the exit of this program, this one-year program. So the overall program, as we run it now, as a participation target is to have 10,000 youth in the National Youth Service Program in EWP, the service in the built environment. And this is a joint target that we at National Public Works will take 5,000 youth into our projects in the coming year. And
the nine provincial departments of public will also take approximately
500 youth each into their project and to collect the data we would reach to send out the target. Essentially, what you're trying to achieve, objective, is that students use these other skills, but also an understanding. You develop skills and understanding and aspirations for building and working in a built environment. So I think currently, given the shortage of artistic skills, what we hope to achieve is that youth start a career into the built environment, but also get excited about pursuing this particular career. So we try to expose them to the, not only the short term, but what are the longer term career opportunities. In terms of the exit strategies, there's a target that about 10% of the youth would be recruited directly into DBW structures. Both at the national and provincial level, there's significant vacancies. And the aim is to recruit some of the youth to come and actually work in this department. And then we want to ensure that the remaining youth enter employment either with the private sector, with other departments or spheres of government, particularly municipalities, or go into entrepreneurship or cooperative training if they want to pursue a self-employment, or go into further learning if they want to develop the skills further at practice. These were then a breakdown of the provincial commitment. So this is how the targets break down. By national, we have a target of 5,000, and all the provinces have at least a target of 500, with the Eastern Cape and KZN a slightly higher target. And these are the approximate budgets that they have allocated. And these budgets are not for the project, these are typically only the budgets that speak to the particular components of the youth development that they would need to be part of the program. So these are then the target groups. It's unemployed youth, age between 18 and 35, who have an interest in built environment, artisan career, reside close to project location, and meet the entry requirements for training, which is typically grade 10 or standard 8. In terms of the recruitment, we have decided both at the national level that we would have a decentralized recruitment strategy. So it essentially would be a local recruitment. It would be based on the project location. So if there's a project in a specific area, we would recruit youth from that area. It would be advertised in that area, so we would use newspapers, local radio stations, posters, asking you to come to these briefing sessions. We would tell them about the program and where they can then apply at the briefing sessions themselves. We also alert youth on existing databases, such as the labor centers and the Ntumbo Youth on database, that this program is starting so that they can also come to the program. Now there's a whole range of mobilization that comes with these recruitment sessions. Planning and briefing, there's a whole shortlisting process. Then the youth do an assessment administered by the Department of Labor, which is part of the then selection criteria. But typically we get a massive oversubscription of youth, so we need to actually cut down and take select from a shortlist. Youth are split into the respective trades, and they indicate their preferences, whether they would prefer, their first preference is to be trained as a plumber, and the second as a bricklayer, etc. And then after that, the ones that are recruited enter into an induction program. This is just some of the what we're trying to do is just split some of the responsibilities, because essentially this program is typically implemented together with the Department of Labor and the Umsubunfu Youth Fund, where the Umsubunfu Youth Fund funds and administers parts of the component. The Department of Labor takes responsibility for training and the respective public works department aligns this with the projects and that they implement as the department. There was at the BIDMEC there was a discussion about allowances that would be paid to the youth as part of the program. And in the end this was decided upon, but the youth would receive 600 rand per month of food and transport stipend while they're in training. But they would obviously receive the training for free, but receive a 600-man stipend, which would allow them to come to the training and the payment of food, etc., during that period. And then while they're doing their service, while they're working on this particular project, they would receive 1,000 rand per month. And generally, the most of the provinces have agreed to this, this set of costs, and so that we wanted to avoid the situation where youth then pay, but in another project, people get paid more. Why are we being paid less than in other particular projects? So we work quite hard with the provinces to come to a standard arrangement. And just that, the calculating there just then outlined some of the cost implications for the respective department. For ourselves, then we meant we needed to mobilize this 15 million of stipends to be paid to the youth during the training period, which we have now done as part of the program. The different training that's provided to the youth, so essentially there's an orientation, a 2-week orientation program, where youth are explained about the National Youth Service, about the Expanded Public Works Program, about public works departments and what they do, about the built environment as a sector and what are the what happens within the built environment, what opportunities. And then they also are, we arrange a site visit where the youth are brought to a project to familiarize themselves with what happens on the construction site. And it's also that after that 2-week period that we request youth to either commit to the 1-year program, or they may decide that this is not a program that is something that's geared for them, and then they can still drop out at that point. But what they expect is that after that 2-week induction, they then make a commitment for a full year to enter into the program. Typically then there's a technical training period for 3 to 4 months, which focuses on artisan skills, depending on the needs of the project and the interests of the youth. But typically the trades we're working on is bricklaying, plumbing, electricians, carpentry, tiling, and related and similar building trades. Then over the period, there is a life skills program that runs over the entire year. So it's not a block of 1 month, but it goes back. And it also goes through the while the youth are working. So there's a period of saying, well, what happened at work and how does it reflect the training that we provided you and why is it important? And then towards the end, depending again on the interest of the youth, there are opportunities for entrepreneurship training if this youth has expressed an interest to start something on their own. If they want to go to co-ops, there can be co-op training about how co-ops function. Some have an interest in additional technical skills. But essentially what is part of it is to help the youth formulate their own exit strategy, where they want to be at the National Youth Service. In addition, we are now working with the different agencies in the department, typically the CIDD, Council for the BIN, that's the Construction Industry Development Board, Council for the Built Environment, CDE, Independent Development Trust, to develop a more specific course for the youth about educating about the built environment, associated professions, career options, and government programs. And we're looking at modules that will include what is government's roles in the provision of infrastructure and highlighting some of the key government initiatives in that regard, site visits to key projects within the area, but also exposing you to related careers in the built environment, be it as professionals such as architects and engineers, contractors, supervisors, artisans, but also the downstream opportunities such as the provision of building materials, maintenance, opportunities in the property sector, etc. And essentially the objective of this is to enhance the understanding of the industry and to motivate youth to pursue careers in this sector further. I think the status we have moved a little bit on from there, and I'll talk to that. Essentially what we're trying with in terms of the training, the provinces typically determine which skills the youth are to be trained on, and that will depend on the project. So if the project needs a lot of bricklayers, they may train more bricklayers. We are pushing as hard as possible that obviously the youth are being provided with accredited skills programs, and as much as possible using the FET colleges in those areas to train the youth. In some cases there's no FET colleges in the areas where we then use a private provider, but if there are, then we typically ask for preference to be given to FET colleges to provide the training. And the provinces themselves arrange that training through the provincial Department of Labour offices, and that creates a fund training for NOIS. The life skills component is provided through the National Youth Service Unit from the Sumbu Youth Fund. And it's shadowed, as I mentioned, over the entire period. It needs to be scheduled together, obviously, with the overall program manager, so it doesn't conflict with other activities in the program. And while at the national level, the National Youth Service Unit has already committed to funding all the training for the 5,000 youth, the province is needed to engage individually with them in terms of getting that commitment from NYS. I understand that now has generally been done, and also Bofa has committed funds to do the life skills for all the youth in all the programs around the country. They're typically the youth, and in terms of the service, they will work on the project, but obviously as much as possible they'll be working in the trade they've been trained in, so if they've been trained as painters, they will do as much training as possible. But obviously there is other work to be done on the site, and we wanted to, it's the expectation that youth do all the type of work that needs to be done. So a lot of the work will be to help establish artisans with the trade. So for instance, in the case of a tiler, he may be helping mixing adhesives for tilers, and not only being tilers. And there may be work, manual work, that they would be expected to do as well, be moving bricks and cleaning sites, etc., which is generally normal practice on construction sites. And I think the key outcome that we like to see in this program is that we have youth who understand the value of work, value of productivity. If you work hard, you meet your targets, that you can make success in this industry. Also understand citizenship and democratic values, which is a key emphasis from the life skills unit component that NYS provides. Are independent and are confident about their own abilities, have good communication skills, have the basic competencies in the respective trades. So we wouldn't be able to, in this year, take somebody who has no experience in bricklaying to become a fully qualified bricklayer, but he would develop those basic competencies and be able to pursue a full qualification later. And then accident has come and have income. Employment either through the private sector, self-employment, or cooperatives. I think we identified a few risks. And I think the key risks are in terms of aligning the planning of the training and the recruitment of the youth with the projects that the department needs to implement, for which there are clear timelines. So if there are delays in training and the youth are not ready when the contractor needs them on site, it has potential problems. Similarly, if the youth have been trained, but there's a delay with the project, and then we don't have a place to place the youth, there's also potential problems there. So I think it just requires very hands-on management from us to ensure that we don't get into these situations, anticipate delays, and work them out. And what we don't want is to get to a blame game situation where everybody then blames each other for possible delays. And I think then that concludes the overview of the National Youth Service component. As you indicated, we can then proceed to the briefly to the presentation of Okupile, which was the other request. People have copies of also there should also be copies in the back of this presentation. Okupile, the Transfer Leadership Program. Okay. And as I mentioned, I'll give a higher level overview, and then Swati will take us into more detail in terms of the Mpumalanga program that has just been completed. I think the program outline, I mean, just to say where we are currently, we presently have about 1,500 individuals on the Fukupila program around the country. These 1,500 are split into 500 individuals who have been trained as contractors at NGO level 2, and 1,000 who have been trained or are being trained as site supervisors at NGO level 4. Essentially, we're trying to create increased capacity in the labor intensive construction sector to support the EWP, so that we can have emerging contractors who also contribute to the overall EWP targets. And what we want is a consensus to emerge with a recognized qualification, project track record, a financial track record, a relationship with a bank so they can access finance, and a CIDP grading of at least 3 to 4. So, in terms of what we have said, what we take into the program are emerging contractors who are essentially defined according to this definition, which is common. It's still overcoming business impediments arising from the legacy of apartments. I think that's the key issue there. And where we're trying to go is a contractor whose own management controls is by historically disadvantaged individuals, but who are able to sustain themselves in the open market, able to operate to open locally and wider. Now this is how the program typically works. So it's a 2-year program at minimum, where learners are taken into the program, they receive a training period of 6 to 8 weeks, and they go and proceed and do a project, where they then come back into class, do another training period, go do another project, come back to class, another training period, do another project. So these projects progressively get bigger, and as the skills of the contractor and the supervisors develop over the period. And over the entire 2-year period, we provide close mentorship to the learners so that they can implement those projects. The learnership is a construction CETA learnership. So essentially what it tries to achieve is a 30% classroom and 30% workplace training. So the workplace training in this case is provided to the project. It's fully accredited and when they complete it, they receive a qualification, either at NCAP level 2 or 4, depending on whether they did the contract or supervisor leadership. So I think what it emphasizes is the learning and the training and doing that over a 2-year period. So it's a back and forth process where people come back to class, reflect on what happened outside, additional theoretical training, and then you go back and do another training. This is just an overview of the different stakeholders that we have to mobilize to get this program on track. As you can see, there's quite it has become quite a complex set of role players, but I think critical in the middle is the province and municipality who typically provide those projects to the contractors to implement over the 3-year period. And then there's a department on the right, which does the program management as well as the mentoring, or provides mentors to the learners. There's a construction seat on the left, which obviously takes responsibility largely for the training. Then there's APSA, who we have agreement with, who provides access to credit to the learners while they're on the program. Department of Labor on the right provides training to the workers that these contractors hire when they do their projects, so that those workers also need to be trained as they are EWP projects that these learners are doing. And then the IDT helps essentially with community facilitation, which is essentially when the contractors go into the communities and start a project, to help them liaise with the community structures there, recruit local labor, and get that going. I think if you look at the spread around the country of where we have these learners, what we try to do is break it down. So you'll see that the program is established in every province, and the number there behind it is the number of learners in that particular province. So if you look, for instance, if you look in Limpopo, we have a program there with Rose Agency in Limpopo, where we have 72 learners in the program, as well as with Sukukuni District Municipality, where we have 30. And so it's spread all over the country. This is the northern half of the country.